All right, everybody, hello and welcome back to In Liberty and Health. And today's episode will definitely be a fun one. The guest was recommended to me today by a very, very good friend of mine and good friend of the show, my dear friend Tommy. So shout out to him. And I was just on his show last week. We talked about heavy metal, and it was kind of funny. I listened to the introduction that he recorded by himself, and it was just a completely different topic than what we planned to talk about. But that's kind of just, you know, what do they say? How the cookie crumbles. Anyways, welcome to all new subscribers, all new watchers. I appreciate all you being here. And if you are here, please hit the like button. I would really, really appreciate that. Feel free to become a channel member as well to see all of the Common Crowns live footage that I get with my trusty GoPro. And there will be a really, really cool show coming up here next weekend where we're going to be playing a very, very long set with a whole bunch of covers, which we don't normally do. So make sure you become a channel member for $2.99 a month, and you could see all 2 hours that we're going to be playing. So it's going to be really, really cool. We're going to have lots and lots of fun. We're going to be talking about trucking today. Very, very excited for this. My uncle is a trucker. And then obviously I have lots of friends who do a lot of trucking. You know, as you guys might remember back towards the beginning of the show, Reed Coverdale, who used to be on all the time. He was a trucker. Tommy Sammons, who's been on a whole bunch of truckers as well. And once again, my guest today is one as well. So before we get into that, make sure you go to all the links below where you can find my guest, everything he's got going on, where you can support him, all that good stuff. And of course, he'll tell you all that stuff towards the end of the show. And of course, myself, tigerfitness.com, use code Kyle at checkout to get all the best supplements that I use all the time. And Falcon Sons Coffee, use code Kyle at checkout, and Deem Fit, link below. I think that's all my obligatory shilling. Now let's get into the rest of today's show.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And welcoming to the show today, I have Mr. Gord McGill with me. How are you doing, man?
I'm fantastic, sir. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, of course. As I told you, I think off air, any friend of Tommy's is a friend of mine. So why don't you let the audience know who you are?
Oh boy, yeah. I'm very honored to be a friend of the ultimate coon ass, and I'm glad that I come highly recommended by him. Yeah, my name's Gord. As you mentioned in the intro, like some of your relatives and Reed Coverdale and Tommy, I've driven truck for most of my life. And I somehow started writing about it kind of semi-professionally here a few years ago, and it's kind of turned into something. Yeah. I didn't expect it to. And then a friend recommended I start a Substack, and that seems to have done pretty well. I started a podcast, and I'm in the middle of writing a book that's sort of a broad overview of the fate of the truck driver in America in 2025. I did a lot of traveling when I was younger. I've lived in Australia and New Zealand. I'm originally from Canada. I just sort of, I don't know, my dad was a trucker. My uncles were truckers. My grandpa was a trucker. I've just always been into trucking, although as of late, I haven't done very much. I was laid off from my last job 2 years ago, and I've been unemployed ever since. I mean, I do other things. My brother-in-law owns a kind of high-tech sort of HVAC ceiling technology that I go to jobs with him sometimes, and then I'm doing this writing stuff. And last year, these guys approached me to write a book kind of out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I've got two kids and a wife and a little homestead here in upstate New York. And yeah, that's the broad view of it.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I think I've been up to upstate New York a few times. I know I've been to Buffalo, New York City twice, and I don't know if it's necessarily upstate. I can't keep track of it. I kind of like block that place out in my mind.
New York State contains multitudes. It really could be 8 or 9 states. It's got some very definite regional character. I'm in the Finger Lakes. I live near a place called Ithaca. Cornell University is here. I'm 8 miles out of town out in the woods. My wife is from Pittsburgh, but she mostly grew up here. And when we got married, we went traveling, and we were working in Australia for a while. And we came home, and we were going to start having kids. It just made more sense to be here because, like, her parents are here, her brother's here, instant community, family support. All my friends back home in Canada are all over the damn place. You know, my mom's no longer with us. My dad's still OTR trucking. So as far as like having kids and family support, you know, this seemed to be the good spot. So here we are.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I'm actually only about 45 minutes away from Pittsburgh, and that's where my daughter's going to be born. So,
right. Yeah. Whereabouts? What direction?
You go a little bit north.
Oh, so you're up like near Newcastle or something, or?
No, only about 45 minutes north. So I live in a small town called Vandegrift, which is right near New Kent.
Right. I remember when I was a little kid, I used to go trucking with my dad sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, we went to a place called Zelianople.
Oh, Zelianople. Yeah, I know exactly where that is. Yep.
And we had to, like, my dad had to pick up this load that was going to Montreal, and we got there right as the place was almost closing, but the guy that was running the forklift was really nice. And, you know, here comes this like 6-year-old kid with his old man trucker. And the guy's like, "Oh, hey kid, you want a donut?" And I don't know. And then he loaded us really fast, and it seemed really cool. I don't know. That name, and it's just such a weird name, Zelianople, you know, like,
we definitely have some weird names around here in Pennsylvania. It's kind of funny you mentioned your uncles and your dad and your grandfather all being truckers, because I kind of see myself in that, in respect to being an automotive technician, where it's like, okay, my dad did it, his dad did it, his dad did it down the line here. And like, I'm kind of looking forward now. I'm like, okay, well, I'm having a daughter, so hopefully she's nowhere near the automotive world. But like, when I have a son, hopefully I'm gonna tell him, but just don't do this blue collar shit sucks.
Just don't go breaking your knuckles all the time for no reason, you know.
I got more scars than I can even manage to count. Everything's electrical now, and I'm EV certified. But you know, the blue collar world, people hype it up a lot, and I think one of the things that frustrates me, and perhaps you could elucidate upon this a little bit further as well, I always see like the stupid online influencers saying, "Oh, you can make 6 figures going into the trades." I'm like, eh. What they're not telling you is that that's like the top 1% in most trades, and those people do not leave work. They live at work. They go,
yeah, there's always lots of disingenuous stuff, and it's yeah. Same with trucking, right? Like, you know, you can make a decent living, you know, spinning wrenches or being a welder or electrician. You know, it's possible. You know, you can do all right as an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. There are some companies that pay fairly well. But yeah, you know, like if you want anything in life, you got to work really hard for it. And, mm-hmm. you know, they do this thing with trucking too, right? Like they tell you, oh, yeah, you could make this amount of money, and you can make up to this much, and you will get this much per mile. But they never tell you the sacrifice, the amount of time you have to be away from home, all the crap that happens to you for which there's no recourse, all of the unpaid time, all of the like just getting screwed around by everybody and chased by the government and held up just about everywhere you ever go for hours and hours on end and never being paid for it. Like there's always something else to the story, right?
Yeah.
And you know, like, I get it, you know, like I'm, you know, I'm considered myself a blue collar guy. A friend of mine's a mechanic, other direction. He's east of Pittsburgh. Okay. And he writes about this stuff professionally too. Shout out Brandon Daly at the Savage Collective on Substack.
Nice.
He's a diesel mechanic, and so is his dad. And, he's a really good writer, and you know, he's pretty well read guy. But you know, there's honor in it, and you know, what's the old saying, dirty hands, clean money.
Yeah.
You know, you earned it, and, there's pride in that, but yeah, you know, there's downsides to everything, you know. Yeah. Your hands are going to get effed up, and you're going to miss a few things here and there and late nights at work, and, you know, but nothing good comes without any sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's a matter of, in every job that you do, especially in like the blue collar field, at least with most of them, the hours are pretty reasonable, at least in my experience. But, you know, they're not really like fields that are for faint of heart. Now, like for trucking, I can't imagine there's as much of like the, not that there's as much ball busting, but like you're kind of less involved day to day because it's a lot of time by yourself and you're spending a lot of time over the road. So it's more of kind of getting to enjoy your own company, which.
Yeah, that's very important. Trucking, as much as like certain occupations and certain blue collar gigs are physical.
Yeah.
Trucking can be, and it is in a way. You have to be able to like stay up for long hours and be able to sit there driving and other duties. But the main game with trucking is psychological because, again, you know, I alluded to the adversity, getting screwed all the time. You're always by yourself. You have to have a sort of, to be a successful long-term trucker, you have to have a certain type of inner strength and, mm-hmm. and a personality that's okay with your own company.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's really important for just about anybody too, because like, I don't know, man. One of the most important experiences for me was living by myself for about a year and a half. And I feel like if you're trucking by yourself, then it's like, oh yeah, you're all the time. Just, you got to get used to being by yourself. So, you mentioned the angle of kind of like the family thing, but how was kind of getting into trucking when you were young and like what age did you start?
Right. So yeah, it's a little bit messy. My parents got divorced when I was about 11 and my dad moved to the United States cause he got married to a lady from down here. Coincidentally, my dad's second wife, was born and grew up an hour away from where my wife is. Mm-hmm. It's a similar neighborhood of upstate New York. It's total coincidence. But anyway, when I was in high school, I didn't want to be at home. I kind of always had a little bit of wanderlust. I would like ride my bike to Niagara Falls or Hamilton. I would go on these like long ass bike adventures when I was like 12, 13. And, because my folks were split up and my dad's never had two pennies to rub together and my mom's had less. It was like, if I didn't work, there was going to be nothing. So when I was in high school, I had a whole bunch of jobs. By the time I was in the 11th grade, I was working three jobs, you know, every weekend, every night after school. I was doing 50, 60 hours a week over and above trying to finish high school. Mm-hmm. And I was working for this trucking company. One of those jobs was with a trucking company, and I sort of learned from the bottom up, you know. They had their own body shop, and back when like trailers were made out of steel instead of aluminum, and I used to sandblast trailers. I helped the mechanics at night. They had night shift mechanics. I would help them with stuff, or I would like go around with the local drivers at night, loading trailers, like preloading trailers for long haul guys to bang onto them and take them away. So, you know, I was going into the mill and chaining down loads of steel in Hamilton, tarping loads. Mm-hmm. I was doing all that stuff when I was like 16, 17. And then when I turned 18, I went and got my Ontario Class A as soon as I could. So I was already like basically driving truck before I finished high school.
Mm. Yeah, I feel that story quite a bit because I started working on cars, I think, when I was 17 years old. And I attribute like my work ethic and my attitude largely to getting my balls busted a lot as a teenager. Like those are kind of like very formative years. And I don't know how much you interact with like younger people kind of getting into the field now, but I feel like a lot of the younger generation going into the workforce now really, really needs that ball busting and they're not getting it. And you're seeing the effects of that, of how they work and their attitude at work.
Right. So there's a certain, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like, there's certain rites of passage, right? Mm-hmm. And a young person does not properly enter adulthood until they've completed certain things, right? Like to take, you know, video games, there's always levels. You have to go through levels, and life has the same thing. And the sort of the, as you put it, the ball busting is one of these things that like tests you out, right? Like you have to be able to like take jokes. You have to be able to accept criticism. You have to be able to like get along with everybody you're working with. And the ball busting is like it's like a method of, it's like a tester. It's like a test,
right?
Right. There was this guy I had on my podcast here a couple months ago, this super far out there guy from New Zealand, named Wes, and he's had a very interesting life. And like, he lived in Sydney and Australia for a while. Then he was in Canada and his dad was a logger and his old man was like just a hard person and had a logging company in Canada and then one in New Zealand. And he described his dad as a pirate. And then like, you know, Wes ended up going off and doing his own thing, and he got into roofing. And, you know, we were talking on my show and he said, you know, they don't, you know, the kids are soft. They don't, they're not on a roof being like yelled at or possibly getting attacked by one of their fellow employees, who started drinking at lunchtime on the job. And it shows. He's like, the health and safety paradigm, and everything being micromanaged has like brushed all that stuff away. And like, okay, maybe, you know, people shouldn't be like, you know, beating each other up on job sites, but the ball busting and the certain sort of visceral and guttural culture of men working together in a physical sense produces a certain culture, and that's been eliminated, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think much of the tragic of the younger generations kind of coming in as well. And I really like the way of looking at it as like a rite of passage, because it's like, if that doesn't weed you out, then at least you have the staying power to withstand that. Now, like, how you respond to it is largely important too. Like, when I see guys that feel entitled to not go through that, I'm like, oh yeah, you need like pressed more, like you need to be extra miserable. So I'm kind of curious, like I'm guessing there's probably some of that camaraderie in trucking, but I feel like that's probably more with like the people you talk to in dispatch rather than like your other truckers, because you don't really have to work with them necessarily as much.
It depends.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it depends. So I had a lot of camaraderie with the guys I worked with when I was in high school. You know, as I grew up and, you know, I sort of worked local for a couple of years, you know, like you're all kind of on the same team and helping each other out. And then like when you go start doing long distance stuff, sometimes you run down the road together or you pass each other coming and going, you know, you're on 94, one's going to Chicago, one's coming home from Chicago. You just chat. And then when I was the best form of camaraderie I had trucking was when I worked on the ice. I did four seasons on the Tibbet to Contueto Winter Road, which is the very first ice road of the first season of Ice Road Truckers. And I was up there when they were filming it, actually. They filmed that my second or third year up there. And it's the same. It's a small group of guys. You're all going back and forth to the mine. You're all seeing each other and passing each other all the time, making jokes on the radio, you know, helping each other out at the mine when you're unloading. You know, you keeping yourselves entertained on these really long drives up the ice. You know, if someone breaks down, you like help them out, 'cause you have to, like, you know, it's 30 below, 40 below, can't leave a guy out there on his own. So there was a lot of camaraderie on the ice, and I miss that a lot.
Gotcha. Man,
Someone in the chat here says, I couldn't fathom driving on that shit. Throw me back in a fucking submarine any day.
Yeah.
Man, I would get claustrophobic. I've been on a couple of submarines, and like I've never been in the Navy, but like in Pittsburgh, there's there's an old US Navy sub tied up in one of the rivers.
Yep.
By a stadium, and there's like a museum or something there.
Yeah, it's the not Ripley's, believe it or not, the Carnegie Science Center. That's it.
Yeah. I went there a little while ago. Took my kids on there. We were inside the sub, and then my dad and I were in Australia, and we had a couple of days off, down in Perth, and we and south of Perth, there's like a suburb of Perth. It's a separate town, but it's close enough, called Fremantle. And there used to be a Navy base there. I think the U.S. military had a Navy base there at one time too. And there's a museum, and they have an old decommissioned Australian sub out of the water, like up. It's and they take tours on it. And my old man and I lucked out. We took this tour, and our tour guide served on that boat for like 20 years. Mm. He's this old retired guy, and he was telling us all these stories of all these various missions he'd been on. And I'm just walking around in this thing, and I'm like, you're spending 95% of your time in this iron fucking tube underwater, not seeing the sun, not touching grass, and dependent on everybody else on that boat and the technology on that boat to keep you alive. And I don't know, man, that would do me in. That would psychologically break me.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because like you're saying all that, but then, you've driven truck for how long? And it's kind of like, okay, well, you're also you're dependent on the technology and the trust in the mechanic that last fixed it to get you down the road. So, it's not like a knock, but yeah, it's kind of like, oh, well, all it takes is one stupid motherfucker on the road, you know?
Yeah, no, and there's a lot of those. There's a lot of those, as I'm sure you all know.
Yeah. Oh, so one thing I heard you talk about with Tommy, which I thought was really interesting, is actually kind of how, like, the U.S. has business relationships and different setups for, like, people who come from out of the country to come into America and set up, like, trucking companies. So let's kind of talk about some of that and also how kind of immigration ties to this.
Sure. Well, we live in this very unique time right now. Obviously, you know, the second Trump administration. We just saw these riots down in Los Angeles in reaction to ICE raids and, mm-hmm. you know, deportations and all that. And all, it's hot on everyone's tongue. It just so happens to be that I've been writing a little bit about where this intersects with trucking, because the trucking business has sort of been abused and parasitized a little bit, partly because of the government doing explicitly stupid things. Partly from leaving loopholes open that shouldn't be, and you know, and to what purpose was all this stuff being done? Like, I have some guesses, but I guess the main thing we have going on right now is that a number of different groups have figured out these loopholes and how to basically insource labor into the United States, specifically to drive truck, right? Mm-hmm. So and this, these systems and these loopholes expanded greatly during the Biden administration. So during COVID, there was a major demand spike. 2021, everyone's hanging out at home, getting their Biden bucks. You know, lots of places are closed. You know, everyone's ordering things online, doing home renovations, doing whatever. And there was a massive, massive spike in demand for trucking. But what the government did is, you know, that spike in demand brought in a lot of other people into the business, right? So, like, you know, rates were going through the roof. People were getting $5 a mile for things. And but the powers that be are greedy motherfuckers, and they don't like it when working class people actually make money. So there's this thing, and you can look it up. I've cited it in some of my articles. There's this thing called the Trucking Action Task Force, which was commissioned by the Biden-Harris administration. And basically, they were answering to a lot of very large carriers who, you know, were saying, oh, we can't get truck drivers, which is bullshit. There's tons of truck drivers around. And they said, you know, we need more. And so they convened this action task force to figure out what to do to, like, you know, make supply chains more resilient, keep things moving. And interestingly enough, like, some people in the Biden administration brought forth academics to consult and say, hey, what can we do to, like, make things better and, like, make sure that the trucks can get everything moving and keep the economy flowing during this very crazy time. And there was they got testimony from this guy named David Carell, who is a researcher at MIT. Mm-hmm. And some people in his sort of sub school there I've done some papers on like what are the holdups in trucking and like what are some efficiencies that we could gain. And they found that on average, most truck drivers only get 6.5 hours of driving done in a day. I mean, obviously, there's some guys that are long haul. They do all their hours they can. But when you averaged it out across all the various sectors of the industry, there was this humongous gaping waste of time and capacity. And so Correll told the Biden administration, you need to get trucks loaded and unloaded faster. They're being detained everywhere they go. Go to Amazon, go to Walmart, go to some distribution center, go to some factory. Everyone's sitting around in line. These places are disorganized. They don't have their shit together. They waste truckers' time. And this creates a capacity crunch. You don't need more truck drivers. You need to use the trucks more effectively. Some other people who've written on trucking labor market economics told Biden basically the same thing. Like, you've got enough truck drivers. You need to use them better and you need to pay them more. Mm-hmm. So what did Biden do? He ignored all that and did the opposite. We need more truck drivers. Just throw more bodies at the problem. So what they did is they doubled the production of CDLs. For typically between 400 and 450,000 new CDLs are issued every year in the United States. In 2022, that went up to almost 900,000. They didn't double the number of truck driving schools. They didn't double the number of DMVs to test these people. So there's some guys I've been working with in Arkansas who've ran the numbers. It's about 10 or 11 states are the biggest culprits for this. And what they've found is something called non-domicile CDLs. Mm-hmm. So basically these states have been allowing people from other countries to just waltz in, get a CDL. You don't even have to have an address, with thus non-domicile. And there's been some like dirty business with like not enforcing requirements. I've been doing some research today for another article I'm writing. Same thing has been going on in Mexico. Basically the Mexican federal DOT who issue truck licenses in Mexico, they have private subcontractors who it appears are in the pocket of the cartels and will basically sell a CDL to anybody. And it doesn't matter even if you're from Mexico, they'll sell CDLs to guys from Guatemala, Honduras, other places in Central America. They've got like no requirements. And now all these guys are running around in Texas, moving loads within the United States, engaging in cabotage. And getting in tons of accidents. And a lot of these new guys that came in under Biden, same thing. Biden had these two issues that he figured he would solve with trucking. Tons of migrants and refugees because they totally abandoned controlling the border. Trucking industry is coming to them saying, we're paying these drivers too much. We need more trucks to help get the prices back down. Biden doubles the number of CDLs by basically saying, okay, cool. Well, we'll just give them to migrants and refugees then. We'll lower the standards to get CDLs. And what we've seen now since that's happened in the last 4 years is that after that COVID demand spike wore off and later in 2022, the trucking industry sort of like went back to equilibrium, but the rates have been in the toilet ever since. Many people in the industry have been calling it a freight recession, but I don't think that's exactly true. What's happened is there's way too much capacity on the market because Biden basically told 500,000 foreigners that they could just show up and get a license. And then through their kin networks, they bought all these used trucks, formed their own companies with these like various dodgy levels of LLCs. And, you know, they're contracting through various load brokerages, most famously through Amazon Relay. Relay is Amazon's own internal system for moving loads. And yeah. Amazon is very happy to hire, some LLC trucking company registered to an apartment building in California that's run by a bunch of Armenian gangsters who hire people from Ethiopia that got here yesterday and have no idea what they're doing, pay them peanuts and charge Amazon 1/3 of what an American carrier would charge them. And they're able to make this work. And then whatever money they do make ends up in remittances going into other countries. And all of the cost of this is put on America. So a lot of these guys are getting in pretty horrific accidents and killing people basically weekly. They're getting the out of service, the inspection statistics on their rigs are incredible. Like these guys are just running junk equipment. Drivers don't speak English, just driving like maniacs. There's a whole cottage industry now, mostly run out of Eastern Europe with backdooring into electronic logbooks. Where, you know, these guys will come and there's like a meme online now about this. We call them the Chicago Volvo Mafia. So basically all these guys from Russia, Ukraine, Serbia, other parts of the Balkans and Eastern Europe who are all basically centered in Chicago and a few other places. And they run all these like super dodgy pirate ass trucking companies, and they have their homeboys online in Poland, like backdooring into the ELDs and letting these guys work 18, 20 hours a day. And they just do it until they get caught. And then when one guy gets caught, they just switch. They have multiple MC numbers. This is one of the loopholes is that they're using is that MC numbers are transferable. So if you have a trucking company and you run it for a little while and you close it, you can sell your MC number to somebody else. And then there's these companies that just buy and sell MC numbers. And so like you can be running one of these, you know, dodgy Eastern European or Somalian trucking companies, run up enough bad inspections and DOT fines that the government finally shuts your MC number down. Then you just buy another one off someone else, slap it on the side of the truck and keep going. And and what this is doing is really depressing everyone else's freight rates, which is basically affecting normal truck drivers' salaries. And truckers' salaries have already been frozen in time since the 1980s. They haven't kept up with inflation because, you know, again, there's another dumb thing the government does is they believe corporate lobbyists like the American Trucking Association who say, oh, there's a shortage of truck drivers. If you actually count the number of CDLs in existence and in circulation, there's tons of people who've gone into and out of trucking. They just quit. And instead of the government telling, you know, big trucking companies or Amazon or Walmart or whoever, well, it's not for the government to subsidize the production of CDLs or to help you. This is a free market. You pay market rates for truckers or go out of business. This isn't our problem. Mm-hmm. But for decades now, there's been this like stealth corporate welfare program where the government subsidizes people to go to truck driving school. And a lot of very large trucking companies have internalized this into their cost structure. And they're just like, okay, cool. Well, we'll just keep going through all these new guys. Someone doesn't like it. They quit after 8 months. Mm-hmm. We'll just hire a new one because training them, the government pays for that. And so there's no incentive to keep good guys around. And so we end up having like tons of rookie drivers on the road all the time, which is they're the ones that are overrepresented in crash statistics. And after decades of this program going on, Biden just like poured gasoline on the fire by saying illiterates that showed up here yesterday from Ethiopia that don't even speak English. No problem. Here's a CDL. Go to work.
Yeah.
That's where the industry's at right now. It's a fucking dumpster fire.
Yeah. I'm seeing this more and more across all blue collar fields is that like the older generations who knew and cared are going out and the younger generations who are going in. I've been thinking about this a lot because it's like for me and for younger generations now, it's like we didn't get to grow up with a lot of this technology, right? And not like as in like we didn't have it when we were younger. We didn't like grow up watching it grow. You know what I mean? Like, so you think back to, I'm guessing you're probably a few years older than me. I just turned 30, so.
Oh, quite a few. I'm 46.
Okay. Well, yeah, maybe even like people about your age, probably even a little bit older. Like I think back to the old 90s, 80s cars and stuff like that, where it was like, okay, well, you have like one control module, maybe two, maybe three. And then now, and like the cars I'm working on, they have like 20 or 30.
Oh, yeah. They're all interconnected, and you have like three computer systems going through a taillight assembly and stuff like that. Oh, yeah.
But like basically, I'm guessing it's probably a similar deal in trucking where it's like all of these people got to grow up with the technology and their like overall wages like kind of kept up with inflation there for a period of time. And they also got the benefit from like, you know, the housing prices getting inflated, all their assets increased in price. Younger people getting into the blue collar fields now don't really get to enjoy that same quality.
No, like, they don't have any assets. I'm glad you brought that up about assets.
Yeah.
A major problem here. Eddie here just brought up Canada again, is that like realist. So here's the thing. They're not making more land, right?
No.
But we just keep making more people. And because like Canada and the United States' immigration policies have been retarded, they just keep throwing more people in the mix, but they can't possibly keep up with housing construction. There's only so many jobs, and you know, you're a libertarian show here, right?
I would say mostly libertarian. Yes.
Okay. Libertarian-ish. Yeah. I spent lots of time in that part of the world too. And, I used to be pretty economically libertarian, and then some things just started not making sense to me. So, you know, we got told, back in the 90s, you know, under Bill Clinton with all these like offshoring deals, it's like, oh, well, you know, we're going to ship all the manufacturing to other places, but it's going to like make prices lower for the consumer, right? The consumer became the like be all end all of all economic thinking. And it's like, okay, cool. Yeah. So flat screen TVs are cheaper. Cheap plastic dog shit at Walmart from China is cheaper. That's fine. The things you need in life, the things you really need in 2025, a fucking house, health insurance, cars, and education for your children, all of the like big ticket items in life are like five times more expensive than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Right. Yeah. Okay. That's great. You know, I can go to Walmart and get cheap stuff. Fine. But the things you actually need are now out of reach for most people. And so speaking to Eddie here about Canada, Canada's got one of the like most hottest housing markets in the world. It's starting to turn now, finally, but like under Justin Trudeau, there's like 5 million people in Canada on temporary visas, right? Temporary foreign worker program, and then student visas, which also allow the students to work. I remember seeing an article a few months ago, something like 4.9 million people. Canada's only 40 million people. So like 12% of the country, an extra 12% over and above the normal population are just hanging around, right? Even though there's not that many jobs. And then there's like the usual immigration. And the first, I read something the other day, in the first 5 months of 2025, 800,000 people have immigrated to Canada. Right. Okay. When I was a kid, there was 24 million people in Canada in like 1988 or something. I read when I was in school, and now it's like 41 or 42 officially, plus another 5 million people on temporary visas, and nobody can afford a house. Right. Like literally the average house price in the city of Vancouver now is something like $1.4 or $1.5 million. The average house price in the province of Ontario is 800 grand. And like, all of this is riding on debt. Like nobody can afford this. Right. And instead of like trying to do something to increase people's wages or their opportunity, our governments are just like, let's just invite the whole fucking world here. And somehow magically it's going to work out. And clearly it isn't. And this is part of what's like made me, you know, whatever, this is the government's fault. We could get it like deep into libertarian theory and stuff here, but like, there's so many problems now going on that are like crisis level, right? So you said, you know, you grew up and we sort of had like a sort of standard of living in the 80s and 90s, a certain like work mode. You could sort of expect to like, you know, buy a car and not have it like have these like nine computer systems in it. And like things would be relatively cheap and you could work really hard and you could get ahead. That's a lot more difficult nowadays. And they're only making it worse by just not the government's not doing anything for the people that live here, and they're not enforcing their own rules. And who benefits? Like cui bono? Who benefits from this? I mean, Amazon does, you know,
bankers, corporations. Yep.
Yeah. Like again, you know, I want to continue to lean libertarian and like keep the government off people's backs, but they're not doing anything about the problems that are under their purview, right? Like let's set aside Libertopia. Let's look at the world as it is right now. The government owns the roads. The government, the roads haven't been privatized. Sorry guys. The government is in charge of the borders.
Yeah.
We don't have like open borders. There is still a border. There is still this concept called citizenship. While that is happening, the government is supposed to do things to make those things better. And they are not.
They're not. Yeah, exactly. It's so frustrating because it's like you think about the LA riots And I see these libertarians trying to defend it and say, oh, like, you know, do you really want the National Guard going there? I'm like, well, yeah, if you have a recalcitrant governor that is telling his, you know, police to stand down and don't defend people's private property. I'm sorry. At a certain point, you got to say, I think if you're the government, Donald Trump was right and Pete Hegseth was right to say, hey, you know what? We're going to send the military in there because you can't go burn people's property down. Like, I'm sorry that you just we're overriding you in this respect, and we're going to protect these people and we're going to put the rioters down by whatever means necessary. That doesn't mean go put a bullet in every single person's skull. But if you see somebody going to violate somebody's property, you give them a warning, and then if they don't stop, then, well, all right, you took your life in your own hands at that point.
Yeah, I just hate seeing this stuff, and, you know, I'm pretty attached to trucking, man. Like, I like it. It's done me well. I managed to go trucking in a couple other countries on temporary work visas, which I realized were temporary, and I did go home at the end of the visa. So don't come at me about being a hypocrite or anything, but like, and it's been very good to me, and it can be. The trucking industry's got a lot to speak for it. It's it's a necessary and vital service to the functioning of the rest of the economy and our wider society. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it got stress tested during COVID. And instead of like doing things to fix it and make it work better, the government has done everything possible to make it fucking worse. And they just continue doing things to make it worse. And it's just so hard to watch. I mean, this is part of the reason I'm writing this book, you know, like this publishing company saw the stuff I was saying in my Substack, and they're like, wow, are you like the only guy that talks about the trucking industry like this? And I'm like, I don't know if I'm the only guy. Maybe I'm the loudest, but you know, there's lots of bad things going on here. And when you put them all together, a narrative begins to, you know, bubble up. And I guess that's sort of what I'm writing about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sometimes feel a little compelled to talk about the automotive world, but it just seems like such a dumpster fire. I feel like all blue collar fields are kind of going this way, where it's like, man, the people, the younger generations getting in are just gonna have such a hard time. Like I've said this a million times on the show, but like people that are 10 years younger than me, they may not ever own a house. Like my wife and I put off having a kid until, you know, she's 29, I'm 30. And it's like, okay, well, now I'm looking at it. We're talking about insurance now. And for me, and if you can't tell, I would like to believe I'm in pretty good shape. I mean, yeah. I have impressive strength stats and all that stuff. I lift like a motherfucker consistently. I eat very, very well.
Preventive maintenance.
Yeah, exactly. I am $650 a month to insure on a family plan. Like, how does it make any sense? And then, like, the other guys I work with who definitely aren't as healthy as me, it's the same price. Like, this is ridiculous. But this is the reason why people don't want to have families, because they're looking at, like, all the costs, and they're like, I can't justify having a kid when all of this costs on top of us. Like, I think most people are going to be okay if they end up in that situation. It's going to be rough, but they'll be okay. I'll be okay. But, like, I'm looking at all this stuff. Like, I can't blame people for just being like, fuck it. I don't want to fucking do that. Oh yeah. And then a house, by the way, I got very lucky because property here near Pittsburgh, very, very cheap. That is one of the benefits of living in Pennsylvania. But like you go anywhere else, like you're looking at a house, it's like $200,000. You don't even make 50 grand a year. Your mortgage takes up pretty much your entire check. Oh, and then heaven forbid you have student loans, you're paying $600 a month for fucking 30 years.
Yeah, no, and this is a big problem. My sister, so my little sister's, but you know, not quite 2 years younger than me. She owns her own business back home in Canada, and you know, she's married, has two sons, my nephews, and a couple of years ago, when this guy Pierre Poilievre was running to lead the Conservative Party of Canada, he was going around and doing all these town halls and listening sessions and, you know, trying to sell himself and like hear people's concerns. Fair play to him. So my sister goes to this this hotel in a little place called St. Catharines to show up to one of his events. And every single person that went to this Pierre Poilievre meet and greet thing was like, where are my kids going to live? That was the only, that was the number one question. Like, people had, like, you know, we're past COVID, we're past all these other things. All, nothing else mattered to anybody in that place except, where are my children going to live? Because, you know, life has become so unaffordable. Housing's unaffordable. Jobs aren't keeping up with inflation. Nobody can afford shit. And, like, anybody there with children was like, what are we doing here? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sad because you don't want that for future generations. Like, you know, and this is a reason why I don't consider myself like an anarchist libertarian anymore, because when I think about this, it's like, okay, well, if you don't have a philosophy that's really centered around prosperity for the future generations, then I think it rightfully deserves to die.
All right. There's been no consideration for the future at all. Right. It's all temporary, short-term thinking, political cycles. What's the next quarterly return? You know, the whole casino that is Wall Street, right, and private equity and all this value scraping that goes on. They just want to, like, cash out as fast as possible. What's the next return on investments? Nobody is thinking about things in a societal wide way and to make things better for people in the future. Almost nobody's doing that. Definitely nobody in charge is doing that, because they just, it's just, oh, I can't, man.
Yeah, dude, I totally get it. Is there anything that particularly gives you hope about the trucking industry and blue collar work in general?
I'm seeing a lot of people like yourself have discussions about this. Again, I mentioned my buddy Brandon. You know, him and this guy Grant started a little collective. There's this sort of loose group of people I hang out with online called the Doomer Optimists. and they are, you know, there's a lot of people invested in craft and, you know, farming and just, you know, working and producing and being like good citizens. And they're thinking a lot about stuff like this, like, how do we work around all of these problems? Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, the resistance to all this garbage is out there. Some of it's hiding in various places online. And so there are people thinking about this. And it's a matter of translating that to, like, a little bit wider action. How and what that looks like, I'm not 100% sure. As far as the trucking stuff goes, like, yeah, man, I'm trying to fix it. I mean, I'm not just, like, writing just because it's something to do. Mm-hmm. I am trying to affect some change here, and we've had, you know, we got Trump to do that executive order reinforcing English language proficiency for CDLs, which should help take out some of the trash. I'm working with some other people on some other stuff to present the Trump administration, and just letting people know, because, like, a lot of people just have no idea about trucking, right? Like, they just go to the grocery store and buy magic, you know, all the groceries are there. They go to the gas station, there's gas, they go to the tire place. Oh, look, there's tires. Like, the, you know, everything gets distributed as if by magic, and most people don't understand the problems that go on in order for that magic to happen. And, you know, sooner or later they will. And I guess my project is to sort of, like, highlight what's going on and, you know, provide the sort of deeper reason for it, right? Like, people will react to certain stuff and they'll have, like, a sort of very shallow, like, oh, here, this issue just popped up. What's this new problem? And they don't look at the sort of, like, deeper causes of it. Mm-hmm. And I would like to reform the trucking industry and how drivers get trained, because I don't think that the system by which truck drivers are trained in America sucks and needs reform. Licensing system sucks and needs to be reformed. How trucking companies get their licenses to operate needs to be reformed, because all of this stuff is working together to just, like, make things continuously worse. Truck involved collisions and fatalities on the road have been going up steadily since 2016, after they were on a nice downslope for a while. Mm-hmm. I've seen all the statistics and I know why this is happening. Truck drivers' wages in America on average. Now there's still a few niche sectors of the industry where you can make some decent money. But on average, they are, you know, 50% of what they were in inflation adjusted dollars in 1980. Right. So like how is it that this like job, this gig that's vital to the functioning of the economy, that's so important, that's so, you know, safety critical, everyone has to interact with trucks on the roads. Why is it the guys doing it are making half of what they did 45 years ago?
All right.
How is this possible? Right.
Yeah.
So like, we just have to like think deeper about like what's causing all of this stuff and like fix up the things where we can to try and make it better before it all goes to shit.
Yeah. I mean, I really think a lot of this does kind of come down to immigration, because you have a bunch of people, unskilled workers, who come in and then will do these jobs for much cheaper than, let's say, you or I would. And they definitely don't have the skills. And like you said, they had to have an executive order for reading English. Like, hello, this is America. Like, this is what we speak here. And if you're in a job like trucking, where you have to be attentive to the road signs, you have to be able to read and communicate proficiently, I don't understand how you ever got behind the wheel of a multi-ton vehicle that could murder hundreds of people if mishandled. Like, it really is.
Well, they waived enforcement of that rule in 2016. Mm-hmm. Because I think it was a combination of incompetence and bureaucracy and maybe a little bit of malice. You know, there was a bunch of nerds, yeah, that worked for the CVSA, these like the representatives of trucking, DOT enforcement between Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you know, we don't see evidence of this like helping safety, and you know, sooner or later we're going to get sued for human rights abuses by making people speak a certain way. You know, there's been a lot of theories on that, but anyway, under the waning days of the Obama administration, they waived one of the enforcement tools of that is placing a driver out of service. You can place a truck out of service or a driver out of service, mm-hmm, if they don't meet federal minimum requirements. So they stopped placing drivers out of service. So you could get a fine for not speaking English, but they wouldn't park you. And that became a loophole, and guys just wouldn't pay their fines and they would just keep going. And again, you know, we have all these other loopholes, right? The ease with which you can exchange MC numbers, which is your sort of federal registration number for your trucking company. And there's just all these ghost carriers around that are like registered through like layers of LLCs. You know, there was an accident, there was a collision in Alabama a few weeks ago. This, mm-hmm, guy driving a truck, he was from the Ukraine, didn't speak English, and he basically drove through four cars, stopped at a red light at speed, instantly killed the first two people he hit, put a bunch of other people in the hospital, totaled these cars, didn't even slow down. And truck owned by some LLC registered to a pizza joint in fucking Chicago somewhere. Yeah. Owned, you know, trucking company owned by some guy from Russia and his wife from Serbia or Bulgaria or something. Turns out she's got a website that does nothing but recruit Eastern Europeans to come to the United States to go trucking. You start peeling back the layers on these incidents you see out on the highway, and it becomes apparent very quickly that there's a lot of like loopholes being driven through, laws being broken. Like, if you're a trucking company, you're supposed to be registered at an address where they like keep all of the records. The DOT can show up and do an audit or an inspection, see where you're keeping your logbook stuff, records about your drivers, records for your equipment maintenance. And like, there's just like there was some place that was found in California that had 700 trucking company LLCs registered there and their MC numbers. And it was just like an apartment complex in California. Like, that's not, this is not legal, but the government's not enforcing it.
Yeah.
Just no enforcement. And then, you know, no enforcement of the English thing. They waived that. Trump just brought it back in here in April. We'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and people just see all these little holes and loopholes and they take full advantage of it. And then they go on these like load boards and like, okay, cool, I'll haul your load for you. Super duper cheap. Well, of course you can, because you've got three guys living in the truck. And if any of them complain about what they're being paid, you just say, all right, cool. Well, you can go back to Serbia and see if you can make that kind of money over here. And these guys are like happy to do it. All that value gets sucked out, goes overseas. And, we got in an accident. You know, this guy in Kentucky, a tow truck driver in Kentucky, a local good old boy, was helping a motorist on the side of the interstate. He got ran over by a big truck. Cops pulled the big truck over. The guy was watching YouTube on a tablet. He hadn't even stopped watching. He pulled over and it was playing, right? So he kills this guy. Turns out the driver is from Uzbekistan. Cops let him go. Then they charge him with murder after the fact, but they already let the guy go. And now he's disappeared. Nationwide warrant for him. Nobody knows where he is. He had like a license registered in friggin' New York somewhere. The guy probably realized, oh, I killed someone. I might as well go back home to Uzbekistan now. Right? Yeah. Like, oh, the people have no idea how much of this shit's going on in the trucking industry, man. It's rampant.
Yeah, and people like that, especially if you kill someone, like, Jesus Christ, why would you let that person go? Put him in prison right then and there. It doesn't matter if he's not from this country or not. You killed an American. I'm sorry, you need to pay, right? And, you know, if, like, there's some jurisdiction or you can't do something, get them out of here. There shouldn't be people like this driving on our roads.
Well, the problem is like, you know, you mentioned that people are coming here. I think a lot of the times they're being brought, right? Like,
yes.
There's the whole NGO foundation nonprofit complex, which is just money laundering for major corporations and globalists and all that. And it turns out a couple of these NGOs are behind trying to get jobs in trucking for migrants and refugees. Mm-hmm. And there was this this dude from Ethiopia crashed into all these people in Texas back in March. Sure enough, Austin, one of these, the headquarters of one of these refugee resettlement NGOs, and right on their website it says, you know, we're trying to get these guys jobs driving truck. Okay, cool. So this dude from Ethiopia has got no idea what he's doing. Drove into cars at speed. It took 17 vehicles for him to stop after hitting stop traffic. A witness said it looked like he was doing 80 miles an hour. Totally wiped out an entire family. Mom, dad, both their kids, all dead. Someone else got killed. 12 people sent to hospital. Dude had just got to the United States from Ethiopia 4 months earlier. Didn't speak a lick of English. And where did he get his CDL from?
Yeah.
And so he gets arrested. It looked like he was drunk, but it turns out he was just tired because, like, he just, you know, what's an ELD? What are hours of service? I don't know. I don't speak English. I just work till they tell me, you know. And so he goes to jail. They clear him of being drunk or under any substances. But, you know, multiple hours of service violations on his ELD, like in weeks leading up to this. So he was clearly just working until he, like, was delirious. And, you know, some fucking bleeding heart lawyer guy, like, got him out on a bond. And who knows? Maybe he's back in Ethiopia now. I have no idea.
God. Yeah, I mean, I've been of the opinion now for a bit that, like, all these NGOs that are literally, they're committing human trafficking when you really break it down. They should absolutely be disbarred and thrown into prison. If you're bringing people over here like that, they're working. And especially if there's harm, yeah, you should go to prison you should serve that fucking sentence, because this would have never happened had it not been for you. And once again, you're bringing these people over here. You're driving up housing costs. You're driving down wages. And then now you made the entire country less safe because you have people that not only aren't assimilated, but also don't understand basic fucking English. Like, I don't
understand. Driving culture, right? Like,
yeah.
America has a unique driving culture. Now, yes, there's bad drivers everywhere you go. We're not perfect, but there's a particular driving culture in the United States and in Canada. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's somewhat, you know, cooperative, and there's just certain standards and place. Like, look at videos, like, go on YouTube sometime and just, like, look at how people drive in India. Look at how they drive in Jamaica. If you've ever traveled anywhere, man, like, it's scary how other places drive. And that's just part of the way it is there. Then those people come here and they bring their habits with them and apply it on our roads. Like, total lack of consideration. They just sort of assume the sort of mass of people that all manage to like run around each other in fucking Mumbai or whatever, that that's the go here. And it's not. And you can't just learn that as soon as you show up, right? But the eggheads that run our society, they don't understand the human element, right? Like, they don't view us as people. They view us as interchangeable fucking human resources, slurry economic units to just get sloshed around wherever they feel they need us, and whether or not the market requires it. Because to them, it's just like, oh, these people are getting uppity over here and want to maintain a normal lifestyle and want too much money. We better flood their market with people and drive their wages down. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, and some of these places too, like, so in Canada, a major investigation went on into this like temporary foreign worker program of Trudeau's back in the day, like in 2019, when like people were starting to notice like, what the fuck's going on here? So Canada's biggest newspaper is called the Globe and Mail. It's been around forever. It's sort of like, you know, the Canadian version of the New York Times. They do an investigation into these TFW things, like a number of them. It's like a whole multi-part series in their newspaper. And they did one on trucking because like we just kept getting all these Indian guys rolling trucks all over the place and crashing in the mountains and no idea what they were doing. And it turns out that like there was a whole ecosystem of immigration consultants, trucking companies, truck driving school owners, and various levels of government people in British Columbia who are all in cahoots with one another. And then they were working to bring Indians to BC to drive truck and, you know, make that community's trucking company make money. And what they had agents in India. So like they would go around the Punjab, you know, and, you know, hey, come to Canada. We'll get you a job. Pay 30 grand up front. We'll get you the work visa. And it turns out like a lot of these guys coming from India had no idea what kind of job they were going to get. They're just like, okay, cool. I get to go to Canada. Sweet. Got my lottery ticket, man. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. They show up in Vancouver and then they're the immigration consultant says, okay, sweet. You're going to this truck driving school and then you're going to go work for this guy over here. And the dude that just showed up from India may have never driven a fucking car ever, might have never driven anything ever in his entire life, goes to some shitbag, dirty truck driving school in Surrey and BC, because in British Columbia, you can do your road, you can take all your tests in Punjabi or in Mandarin. Like, there's no, like, requirement to do it in English or French, right? Mm-hmm. And so these guys just kept getting show up, and some of them, like, I feel bad for them, you know, like, these guys are like, oh, I got told to drive to Toronto. I've never been over the Rocky Mountains. I have no training. But if I quit or say no, they'll pull my visa and send me home. So it's like these systems of indentured servitude where, like, we're bringing people. The government is allowing gangsters from other countries to abuse their own fellow countrymen from other places, bring them to Canada, put them to work in a job at, like, way less than what the locals get paid, in a clear undercutting and wage suppression operation that has resulted in like thousands of people getting killed. My friend Justin did a search on the GoFundMe, typed in Singh, the last name Singh, you know, the sort of Punjabi sort of honorific. It's not really a last name. It means lion and it has to do with the sort of Sikh faith. But anyway, punches that into GoFundMe. And it's just dozens and dozens and dozens of these fucking poor Indian families like, oh, help us get our son home. Because, like, some guy got here from Amritsar. 3 months later, he crashes his truck in the Rocky Mountains somewhere and gets killed. And the family back home in India, they got no money. And so they, like, start a GoFundMe to, like, try and get the guy sent home. Or, like, somebody didn't have insurance. And they're, like, they're all banged up in a hospital in the U.S. somewhere. Oh, you know, my son, Amarjeet, here, look at him. He's all fucked up in a cast. And, like, again, driving a truck, getting in an accident, no business being here. And the only reason they're here is the government is letting other Indians fucking abuse them and bring them over here to undercut my job.
God. Yeah, I think it's kind of like the frustration that I kind of have with the Trump administration right now is that they're starting to make an emphasis on legal immigration and how that's like a great thing. Yeah.
Everybody, time out. We just need to stop until we figure out what's going on, right? Like, how many tens of millions of people, like, they just have no idea. And then, like, I can speak more about Canada because that's where I'm from, but, like, literally 12% of the total population of the country is people here on temporary visas, and they've been having protests. There's been these nationwide protests in Canada for the last 2 years because they know at some level the jig is up, and so they're saying, we don't want to go home. So these, so all these, like, scammy Indian fucking recruiters in India promise these kids, come to Canada, go to this school, take whatever course you want for business management or whatever. We'll get you this student visa. It'll allow you to work on the side, and then, like, you can stay. But it's not, it doesn't say on the visa you can stay. It's a temporary student visa. So these people show up here and they're like, sweet, I'm in Canada now and I'm just going to stay here forever. And it's like, no, temporary. It says on the fucking visa, temporary. And now there's these protests all across the country saying, well, we don't want to go home. Like, well, what part of temporary do you not understand? Right. Where are you going to live? There's this whole thing in Canada, too, with these, like, never mind trucking. There's these, like, fake universities. You know these, like, schools that say, oh, we're going to teach you, and then we're going to get you a placement. But they're
diploma,
not like
diploma mills, essentially.
Yeah, diploma mills. There's a whole fucking industry in Canada of diploma mills, and the diploma mills are owned by guess who? And then those diploma mills, the owners are like, oh, I have these apartments where you can live while you're going to our school.
Oh, no.
Oh, cool. So there's 15 people living in this apartment building. It's like they're just transplanting Indian conditions to Canada and expecting us to put up with it.
Yeah. My God.
Yeah, oh, it's insane. And then they're like, you know, I get it. You know, like, whatever's happening here in North America is like 10 times better than home. And I understand why you want to stay, but like I've been unemployed for 2 fucking years. I can't get a job trucking anymore. It doesn't pay. They don't pay enough. Like, the last guy I worked for was basically paying me almost less than minimum wage by the time you figured my salary out over the amount of hours I was working. And the only reason he's able to get away with that is because the entire fucking labor market here is upside down because there's too many people here.
Yeah, I've long said now that, like, you pretty much have to abandon Canada and California. Like, it's, I hate to say that, lost causes. I don't think they're coming back, especially, you know, they voted in Trudeau, and now who the hell is his name now? Mark Carney?
Yeah, Mark Carney. And no change. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Carney was an advisor to Trudeau, right? Carney's a bankster. He was the governor of the Bank of Canada. He was the governor of the Bank of England. He got airdropped into Trudeau's spot. And, like, I've had to explain this to a few of my American friends who have, like, watched what happened in Canada going, like, what the fuck's going on up there? But it's the Westminster parliamentary system. Everything they did was technically legal. Is it democratic? No. Is it ethical? No. Is it pure, venal, holding on to power in any way possible? Yes. Like, Carney wrote an op-ed in this same newspaper, the Globe and Mail, advising Trudeau to use the Emergencies Act to crush the Freedom Convoy. He called us seditionists. Like, this guy that replaced Trudeau was Trudeau's advisor telling him what to do. Like, it's this total continuity of the Laurentian elite ruling regime in Canada, what you've just seen.
Oh, good Lord. Well, Gord, is there any hope, man? What the hell do we got going for us? God.
Well, we've got us. I mean, people are noticing. And, you know, I was listening to a podcast earlier today. Shout out Trish Wood. Trish Wood is critical back home in Canada, and she was interviewing this guy named John Carpe, who runs this thing called the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, or I think that's it. I could have got that wrong. Anyway, he was saying, like, he's like, yeah, you know, a lie will get around the world instantly before the truth is putting on its shoes, right? However, he did say truth endures. It takes a long time, but it always endures. And, you know, lies eventually get figured out. You know, the Soviet Union collapsed. It was built on lies. Various regimes in the past, same thing. They can only operate on bullshit for so long, right? sooner or later, reality is going to come looking for its for the bill to get paid. And as long as like we sort of stay strong and keep our eyes open and keep your eyes on the prize, do right by yourself and your family and your community, and just take no shit from these swine. You know, you just have to endure, and eventually the truth, you know, we'll get caught up.
I guess we could hope. That's definitely what I try to do, and it seems like you try to do that as well. So,
yeah, I didn't mean to doom on you so hard there,
man. No, no, man, it's all good. No, towards the end here, we always try to bring it back full circle. So, it's getting late over here, man. Let's go let the people know where they can support you and listen to all your stuff. I find you very easy to talk to, and I enjoy all your interviews, and all listening to your show too has been very, very enjoyable for me. And you're very, very well versed on the trucking stuff, so it's very interesting. I could only aspire to be the same wealth of knowledge about the automotive world. So go ahead, let everybody know where they can find you and support you, Gord.
Right. I appreciate your kind words and your positive assessment, sir. I write mostly the autonomoustruckers.substack.com. That's my little Substack. I write at other places, the American Conservative, American Compass. You know, I've written for The Blaze. I've written for Zero Hedge. My podcast is called The Voice of Gord. It's not regular. It's not video. It's just audio. I started it as a gift to my fellow truckers to give them something to listen to going down the road. It's on all your major podcasting platforms. Just type in Voice of Gord. 3 years, I've only done 105 episodes. It's sort of a passion project, but like, you know, I've spoken with academics and people who've studied the industry. I've spoken with trucking company owners, lawyers, truck manufacturers. It runs the gamut, fellow truckers, a bunch of Freedom Convoy people I've talked to back home in Canada. I've been following a story of these guys who are still in jail downstream of the Freedom Convoy. Don't forget the Coots 4. Well, it's Coots 2 now. Tony Oleanik and Chris Carbert are still in jail for doing nothing but attending a peaceful protest. Canada is a totalitarian state with political prisoners now, much like the January 6 guys in D.C. So yeah, go to my Substack. You can read, and my podcast is there as well. You can read all the stuff. I typically repost my mainstream media articles there. I'm on Twitter at Gord McGill. I've been really quiet on Twitter for the last couple of weeks. I'm trying to write a book. The book is going to be called End of the Road: Inside the War on Truckers. It's going to be published in March of next year, 2026. By a new publishing company called Creed and Culture Books, who are so new, they don't even have a website yet, but they gave me a little advance and they're helping me out. And I'll be really pumping that book in the springtime, and it's going to be a expanded version of everything I just told you here with lots of receipts and detail.
Nice. Well, I'll be looking forward to that. We'll have to have a conversation whenever that comes out, because I, like I said, I find you a wealth of knowledge on this stuff, and I really enjoyed it. From Eddie, great guest, Kyle. Thank you, Gord, of course. So, Gord,
thank you, Eddie.
Yeah, if you don't got anything else, we'll call our stream there.
Yeah, no, thanks so much. Thanks for having me on. Shout out, Tommy. Thank you for hooking us up. And yeah, let's talk again sometime. Maybe we'll just talk about like the actual trucks themselves, you know, and we'll get automotive. We'll get our hands greasy.
That's what I'm all about. All right, Gord, I'll end the stream here. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, take care.
Take her cool.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.